Welcome to Mending Fences, a podcast about effective ways to communicate and live with differences. I'm Patrice Bremner.
And I'm Jen Hawthorne. We're both family law mediators and collaborative law attorneys, but our conversations go well beyond family law. We explore the personal, interpersonal, legal, and cultural impact of conflict.
Hi, welcome back to Mending Fences. I'm Patrice Bremner, and I'm here today with Jen Hawthorne, as usual, and Justin Kelsey. And today, we've invited Justin to come and talk to us about the use of silence in dispute resolution. Justin is a collaborative attorney and mediator with an office in Southborough, Massachusetts. Justin also teaches mediation at New England School of Law and trains mediators with the Divorce Mediation Training Associates. So, Justin, I've been looking forward to this conversation because as a practitioner in, as a mediator, where I'm a neutral, and in collaborative settings, I've seen the power of silence in the room, but I continue to be uncomfortable with it, particularly in mediation. I find it much easier to sit in silence in collaborative settings, and I'm hoping you can help me understand why.
Thanks for having me on, first of all. And on this idea of silence in dispute resolution and the use of it, I've been exploring this in workshops, thinking about writing a book on it. I think it's an interesting topic, and the issue of when, you know, when we use it, how it's used, and why it's uncomfortable at times is I think all of a really interesting different parts of this conversation. And the way I've sort of broken it down and started to think about it is that we often think of silence just as the absence of something, and I like to think of it more in an active way. And I use the example, and when I do this visually, if you've ever seen the sort of optical illusion of a goblet with two faces on it, and the faces or the goblet are in the negative space and the other part is sort of the active thing. In the same way, we often think of silence as not existing there. It's like just the darkness in the background. But I think we should think about it, especially as an intervention in dispute resolution, as something active. So in other words, what are we trying to do when we're being silent? Sometimes it is just the negative space. We're leaving space for the other people to talk. And when we talk about active listening and mediation training, that's a really important part of being a good mediator or being a good collaborative professional, is making sure there's space for other people to talk. And to really listen, we have to give them that space. But also the way that we use silence can be purposeful. That, you know, in a collaborative setting, I think we're often leaving the space for other team members to jump in. And I think it probably feels more comfortable because oftentimes in a collaborative setting, you've sort of built that trust with your team. So you know, like, if the coach jumps in here, I'm going to be comfortable with why they're jumping in and what they're jumping in for. And they're with a team you've worked with multiple times, you often start to get a flow for that. Like, this is a good place for the coach to jump in versus me. And so there's a comfort in being silent because there's a trust in the team. In mediation, we often talk about this in training, especially if you do solo mediation, sort of on your own. And it can be a little bit scary. And so it's great to have peer groups where you can talk about what you've done. And I also enjoy doing co-mediation where you have a chance to debrief with the other mediator. But when you're on your own, that silence is that much more sort of dead air. And that's, it can be uncomfortable for the mediator. It can be uncomfortable for the parties. But that is also something you can specifically use. And that's sort of what I mean about it being an active use. Sometimes one of the things you're using is the discomfort in the room to get people to think about what they're going to say next. Sometimes a little bit of discomfort is helpful in conflict resolution. So the fact that you're uncomfortable with it, I mean, you're feeling sometimes what the parties are feeling too. And that's part of what I'm talking about here in terms of using it as an active intervention, even though we think of it as the absence of something.
And I think you described that really well. In a collaborative setting, when I've had good experiences with silence, and I haven't thought of it as an intervention. So that's a new concept for me, that it's already helping me just thinking about it in this conversation. But I think it's not just comfort with the team knowing that whatever they're going to do is going to be helpful, but also just knowing that we're being silent together, like that I'm part of a professional team that's here holding this space for the clients to let them do whatever, whatever's the next thing is going to be in the room, versus a mediation where it really does feel like all eyes are on me. I'm on my own, and I have this fear that it feels like it's an anxiety, I think, that the clients are looking to me to provide some kind of guidance. And if I'm not saying anything in the silence, I'm letting them down.
Well, and there's definitely been times when I'm mediating before where I think I'm using silence as a way to mark a moment or to give them space to brainstorm. And instead, it does turn out that it seems it's frustrating to them because someone will react with, well, Jen, can you say something? And in those moments, I think it's just really important to remember that different interventions work for different people in different ways. But I'm curious about your opinion, Justin, on like marking a moment, like if they've just come to a good agreement or something like that. What are your thoughts on silence in those moments as well?
So part of what we teach in mediation training, this idea of active listening, has a whole bunch of different components. And one of the things we do as active listeners is we summarize or clarify agreements. And those are active, like I'm saying something to, sort of repeating back what was agreed to or asking a question to clarify, sometimes encouraging or validating, what a great job in reaching an agreement at that point. So how can silence do some of those things? Again, like you said, it works different for different clients, but there are times when a moment after they've reached agreement gives them a chance to add something and clarify themselves, or just sort of let the weight of that sit there and the relief of it sometimes, again, depending on how hard it was to get to that moment, those particular clients. And I find if people turn to you and they say, Jen, so now what? Then they've told you, we've had enough silence. Like, I think we sometimes want to jump in before that and fill that space and not get to the point where they're asking for it. But I actually think that's okay, because then they're actively telling you what they need. And we don't always give space for that, for people to actively tell you what they need. We make assumptions about what they need and we fill that space. It's actually something I see a lot. We do role plays with brand new mediators and we're training them, and they'll fill every space with a, well, what do you think about that? What are your thoughts on that? The sort of tennis court back and forth almost. And it's easier to see when you're in that role of observing another mediator that you didn't need to do that there, that you, especially in person, and this is one of the things I have struggled with on Zoom and doing online mediation, is I feel more of that discomfort with silence and feel the need to fill it in more. There's such a fear of talking over each other online and how the sound just works different. And I think the silence feels different because you also can't use your body language as much. Silence from just a verbal component doesn't mean you're necessarily being silent. When we're in person, eye contact is such a powerful thing. And turning to the other person and just looking at them can be a marker for, I'm expecting you to have your turn to talk now, without saying any words.
Right. We're using those cues right now. We're sitting having this conversation and the people listening won't be able to see it, but we're actively using our eyes and our body language, our hands in this conversation.
And that's harder to do online. When you're in person, though, I expect when, Jen, you were saying there's sort of that silence and they've reached an agreement. What am I doing with that? Am I jumping in? What you're probably doing naturally when that happens is you've looked to both of them first to see if the other person wants to speak. And part of the problem with Zoom is they can't tell that we're doing that, that I've looked at each of them.
I was just going to say that I had that experience the other day where I realized they didn't know what was happening, but I was watching both of their facial expressions to try to understand if their conversation was done and if it had reached its limit for that day. But they had no idea that's what I was doing. And so I think it felt more confusing to them. So I think that you're completely on point that silence might have different effects on folks experiencing the process with us in person versus on Zoom.
I think when we're thinking about using silence, there is that concept of absence versus active silence, but also the sound versus other things, other ways that we're communicating. And, you know, when I'm talking about being silent in dispute resolution, I'm often not also talking about being completely still. Like, I'm using eye contact, I'm using other things to communicate somewhat, even though I might not be using words in that moment. Another sort of just point to make about that, and one of the things I talk about when I talk about this is, in thinking about what is an active silence, what is an active intervention, there's purpose behind that too. Like, it forces me to think, and it just makes me a little less uncomfortable with the silence, that I'm doing it for a reason in that moment. It actually makes me a little bit busier as the mediator, because I'm not just taking a break when I'm silent. I'm thinking about why am I doing this right now? But there's a quote that has helped me sort of think about that, and it's from Gandhi. It said, "Speak only if it improves upon the silence." So the silence has a purpose, and speaking has a purpose too. But if I'm going to intervene with something out loud, it should be better than the reason I'm being silent, which is another way of thinking about it.
It's a great quote.
It is a great quote. That might be the right way to end, talking about silence.
Thanks for coming, Justin. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again, maybe about something else.
Thanks for having me.